Audiobook of A Subaltern in Spirit Land, a sequel to Gone West, by J. S. M. Ward. From 1916. Introduction. In Gone West I have explained at some length the manner in which that work was obtained. In this sequel I have abandoned automatic writing, and utilized solely the power I had developed of passing in the trance state to the next plane of existence. The death of my brother created a new link with the unseen world which is all around us. As he had passed, not to the spirit plane, but to the astral plane, I concentrated my attention on the latter. I did this the more readily as it is to this plane that the great bulk of our soldiers have passed. Naturally, conditions there were abnormal during the war, but these very conditions were the more interesting to all of us whom they have left behind. Having myself suffered such a loss by the death within the same year of three close relations, I can realize how terribly many another has suffered during these last 5 years. I have had an advantage denied to most of my readers, that of being able to go out there and communicate face to face with those who have passed over. Yet despite this, I felt most bitterly their loss. How much more, then, those who cannot do so? In giving this narrative to the general public, I have been actuated by the desire to bring comfort to others in a similar position of loss. I knew that the dead die not long before my brother died, but of the manner in which they live I knew only a little. Except for the brief account of the astral plane by W. A., and another rather specialized account by the officer, my knowledge related mainly to the spirit plane. Of the astral plane under war conditions I knew nothing. The interest Gone West aroused has been shown not merely by its sales, considerable as these have been, but by the large number of letters I have received, which have been of the greatest encouragement. Those of us who are endeavoring to spread the true knowledge of life beyond the grave, are doing so in the face of opposition alike from the ordinary man of the world and from the ministers of established religions. Sometimes we are laughed at, whilst at other times we are called necromancers. Some of our opponents even go so far as to hint that we are not quite sane, but this has always been the way in which new truths are received at first. Nevertheless, it may be of interest to my readers to know that I am a perfectly normal man, one who is earning his living in business and who has every day to deal with complex mundane matters. The fluctuations in the rate of exchange, source of the raw materials of industry, the German methods of trade penetration, and trade statistics are a few of the subjects with which I am concerned, and on all of which I have written articles and issued reports which are readily taken by the trade journals. I assure my readers that, from the financial point of view, it pays far better for me to write two or three articles on openings for British trade in, say, South America, than it does to write such a book as this. I am not a medium, plying for hire, as the daily papers would call it. And if you met me at dinner, unless I spoke of these things, you would find me no different from 100 other busy men of affairs. Why, then, should the critics suppose that my ordinary clear business mind fails me when I turn to investigate psychical phenomena, or think I should waste my time practicing a heartless fraud on my readers? After all, those are the alternatives. If I did not feel that the message these pages contain was not merely true, but of vital importance to our sorrow-laden world, be assured that I could not thus publicly reveal much which is absolutely sacred to my personal life. And, after all, is the picture of life beyond the grave so unnatural? For my part, I consider it absolutely rational and reasonable, and on its own account much more intrinsically probable than the misty and unconvincing stories of heaven and hell on which our early years were nurtured. Is the average man at death in a state to appreciate the heaven as depicted? The churches can give us no rational account of life beyond the grave. The best attempt is that made by the Roman Catholic Church, and it will be noticed that many of the statements made by that body are borne out by the narratives we are now obtaining. But not all she says is correct. It would appear to the impartial observer as if at one time the Roman Catholic Church at least had kept the doorway open, but at a later date closed it, and since then much which her seers had learned became distorted or misunderstood by a later generation. For the most part, however, the churches have utterly failed to answer the agonized question. Whither go we? Long years ago, a Christian missionary stood before an Anglo-Saxon king and pleaded his cause. Then arose a priest of Woden, and said, "O king, the life of man is like a sparrow which flutters into the lighted hall out of the dark and stormy night. For a moment it flies round our hall, lit by the cheerful light of the fire, and then it vanishes once more out into the sleet mid the rain. Such are we. We come out of the dark, and into it return, but whence we come, and whither we go, we know not. If these men can tell us aught, then let us follow them, and leave the old gods behind. Have the churches really answered the great question? I, for one, say no. And there are tens of thousands in England today who will agree with me. Then let others endeavor to do so. Let us direct the same scientific minds, as have won from nature her hidden secrets, to demand of death the greatest secret of all. Let us direct the scientific mind to study the soul and the spirit of man, as it has already studied his body. And this is being done. Each day the number of careful students grows greater. Each day new discoveries are being made, and if the churches will not cooperate, regret it though we may, then we who do know the truth must go on alone. A new dawn is breaking, and the most priceless kind of knowledge is attainable, and that is not the belief but the certainty of life beyond the grave. One objection which is often raised to works similar to this is that the life they depict varies in every different work. As a matter of fact, if the critic would read enough other books, he would find that certain essential points were in agreement, and that it was only the details which varied. When one realizes the vastness of the unseen world, one can expect no less. After all, if the men of Mars dispatched 6 messengers to Earth, and instructed them to wireless back a detailed account of its inhabitants, the Martian papers would probably make the same sort of comment. One article might reasonably begin thus: "The messages purporting to come from the misguided fanatics who set out to reach the Earth are too absurd for words. They absolutely contradict each other in almost every detail. We are told that the world is a sandy desert, with no water, and then that it is a dense and swampy jungle. This is followed by the statement that it is a frozen land, whose inhabitants cover themselves with skins. We are told that people are black savages who live in miserable huts, and then we receive a fanciful story of a mighty city, with machinery and mechanical transport. We are told they can fly, yet the next message says that the people are yellow, and though they have cities and some civilization, yet they have practically no machinery at all. What can we make of it but either fraud or the dreams of madmen? And, after all, the explanation would merely be that the messengers had landed in such widely separated areas as the Sahara, London, the Congo, Chicago, and Greenland. The real introduction to this book is written by R.L.W. himself, whom I asked to dictate to me what he would like to put as a foreword. So closes my share of this talk, only hoping that this true account of the trials and triumphs of a young subaltern will bring hope and peace to many. J. W. R.L.W. speaks, "They say, they died that we might live, and having said so, straightway they forget us, save the few lonely souls who mourn in secret and find no comfort. As for the others, they turn to quarrelling amongst themselves, as if sufficient ill had not been wrought already upon the groaning earth. Such men as these even pay lip service to our heroic dead, and use the catchword to advance their own particular ambitions or social theories. But all of these are wrong, those who mourn, and those who have forgotten. We died that justice, truth, and liberty might live. We died, at least I died, that England might be free. For these things we died, and, having died, we live. This is our great reward, and nothing ye earth folk can do can take it from us. Filled with this newfound knowledge, is it strange we burn to tell those we have left behind? Not death, but the fear of death appalls. Remove this fear, and life on earth becomes a life worth living. Nay, more than that, it takes its proper place, and ye will see it as it is, but one short step in the endless chain of life on many different planes. To those who mourn us I would say, rather be glad, for having met the dweller of a threshold, we have found him to be a friend, and not a foe, a bold knight who comes to break our chains, and not the grim warder who would bind us in his prison. from countless petty toils and ills, at one swift stroke he sets us free, and we are grateful. This life, compared with yours, is as the life of some soft June day compared with dark November night, and yet I know that it is but a shadow of that life which lies before us. If I had any fear, it would be that, at some long distant day, I might be doomed to return once more to earth and dwell as mortal man. Nay, ye will say, but parting sure is sad, and we who still remain must grieve for those we loved who now have passed away. Yea, parting sure is sad, yet ye break your hearts when the sun leaves England's shores and settles in some far distant land? But still he writes to us, ye answer, but these, the dead, write unto us no more. Why, every day we write to you, nay, even call upon you. Do we not come to you in your so-called dreams? Can ye not find means by which ye can receive our messages if ye choose? Ye know ye can. Each day the news of our tidings are bruited about. Men speak of strange messages even in the trains by which ye travel to your daily task. Rejoice and be glad, for we are free, as ye can never be. The greatest tyrant of all is dead, that tyrant who, with sycophantic gesture, ye lord and worship. For no longer are we slaves unto our physical bodies. No longer are we compelled to toil and struggle at uncongenial tasks that we may earn our daily bread. No man can deprive us of our work, and no man lord it over us. Freer are we than the birds of the air, for even they must seek their daily food and live in fear of man. But above all this, we are free of the fleshly habits which ward against the soul. Ay, that was best in earthly life we have, only the worst is lost, and in their place are far more wondrous days. Here is set forth some little part of what we know as life. Take comfort, burdened souls, and know that half has not been told. Would ye, then, wish us back on earth? If so, is this not selfish? Do ye then, find the world so good and pleasant? Is it so happy, and so full of peace? Nay, had I one enemy, as I'll have none, I could wish him no greater ill than that he should live for ever in the world. Not so. He hath been very gracious in that he ordained that we should be on earth so short a time. For we lived long enough to know the pettiness of earthly life, and then were transferred to a happier world. Mourn not for us. Mourn, if mourn ye must, for those who, having passed through the searing fires of war, return to England to find their high hopes dashed, or even, maybe return so altered by the war that they no longer are the quiet, pleasant boy they were. I tell you I am happy, and so are all of us who chose the upward path. Life is full of interest, and the future holds no hidden terror to oppress our waking hours. For, with the passing of the King of Terrors, all fears have passed, and we dwell in perfect confidence, knowing that the future lies before us like a broad, golden path of light, along whose shining path choice flowers of everlasting beauty grow, and every bend revealing some glorious landscape more enchanting than the last. So, onward journeying, we leave behind us the dark, gloomy forests of the world, till soon they will appear no more than from an ill dream but half remembered, and though we do not claim that our joy is perfect, for perfection is still far hence yet, fearing nothing, we press on, find pause but for an instant to send to earth our message. Follow after, we have blazed the way, and we will receive you all as our friends. For the love that was kindled on earth burns more brightly here, and our hatreds die away. All that was best we have with us forever, and only the worst is left behind. We did our work on earth, and we are striving to do it here. Think of us as we are, not of us on earth as we were. Rejoice with us in our freedom, until we meet. Follow the light that ye have till it shines forth in glory as the gateway of death closes firmly behind you. RLW. Part 1, First Impressions of the Astral Plane, Chapter 1. How I Found My Brother, April 29, 1916. Dark mists rolling by. Flashes of fire. In the distance a continuous roar as of the thunder of many guns. Hosts of spirits rushing to and fro, chaos and gloom. Then I found Rex. He was seated on a bank by the roadside, clad in his uniform, but though I could see his face distinctly, yet his figure seemed rather indistinct. He was delighted to see me, and said, "I have waited long for you." "How did you die?" I asked.
"I do not know," he replied. "Everything seemed to be in a nightmare state. There seemed to be a blank, and then I went on again, and it was not for some time that I realized that I was among unfamiliar surroundings. Even now I can't arrange things at all in any order, they seem jumbled up together."
"J. W. Did you see the requiem we held for you today?"
"Yes, I did. I was jolly glad of it. I seemed to be drawn across this land towards a distant spot, and I saw a beam of light coming up through the ground, and as I stood in front of it, it grew wider and wider, and the ground became transparent, and I looked down into St. Mary's and saw the chapel and further putting my sword on the altar behind the cross, and I perceived then the whole service. I saw Father and you and quite a number of others. You who are still of this earth saw, as it were, embedded in a shadowy form, and you yourselves often looked rather different. Do you know what the shadow is?"
"W.
Yes, our bodies. Being on the astral plane you see our astral forms, which are often different from our bodies, but our bodies, if you see them at all, you see is a shadow surrounding our astral forms. Well, beside them, the whole church was full of strangers. Some were like you, but without the shadow. These would be people from here, while others again looked different. I can't describe how.
W. Doubtless they came from the spirit plane.
While I was watching all this, several strangers up here drifted up and watched what was going on, but did not speak. The service seemed to soothe me. I felt as though I were hopelessly distraught, and it acted like soothing music might on a person suffering from mental worry, on earth."
"J. W. Well, old chap, tell me about life here. How do you find it?"
"Fearfully lonely. As you see, there are heaps of people, but no one I know. I feel lost in a strange land."
"W. I'll ask HJL to come and help you a bit.
I feel sure he will. He does not reside on this plane, but on the spirit plane, and he can come down here sometimes and help you. At any rate, he would be a companion. I wish to goodness you would."
"W. I shall doubtless see him on Monday.
I wonder how long that will be."
"W. Today is Friday.
That conveys nothing here. All time is different.
If, indeed, there is such a thing as time."
"W. Well, it won't be long, I hope. How did you know that I was ready to do automatic writing on Wednesday?"
"Don't know.
First my promise came back strongly to me, and then I felt drawn in a certain direction, where I found myself in a shadowy sort of bedroom. I saw you, and heard you speaking to me, and somehow the pencil began to move."
"W. I must be going now.
Goodbye, old chap. You may depend on me to do all I can."
"Why must you go?"
"W. I feel it, but I'll come again next week." Even as I spoke, he sprang up and rushed wildly away. The chaos grew greater all around. Clouds of smoke seemed to engulf us all. The earth shook and dissolved. I felt myself falling, 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 while around me thunder and lightning played. These grew more distant. Silence then, after a pause, I awoke in my bedroom. It was 2:30 on Saturday morning and I could not sleep again till 8 a.m. J.
W.
Saturday, April 29, 1916. Chapter 2. HJL answers the call. May 2, 1916. I passed into the spirit plane as I had done so often before. Saw the well-known landscape, passed through the park to the college, and so into the room of HJL. "Boss," I said, "I want you to help my brother Rex. He was killed in action on Good Friday, April 21, in France."
"Did you know it?"
The boss held out his hand to me.
"No, I did not. As you know by now, we do not know all, and of late I have rather lost touch with the earth plane.
For your sake, I am very sorry, but for my own, rejoice that one of my relations has given up his life for the cause of our country. You, I know, my boy, must miss him terribly, nor will I attempt the usual line of consolation. You know yourself the truth of the axiom that he has but moved from one land to another. Tell me all you can, and as to my help, you may rely on it. J. W. He was killed by a shell. Around him the trenches were captured by the Germans, but he and his men held on firmly to their peace, so the Germans poured high explosives on it and he was killed instantaneously. His captain and adjutant speak highly of his bravery, and say he died holding on in a tight corner, encouraging his men to the last. They buried his body on Easter Day. H.J.L. Well done, Rex. Fancy that tubby little boy, who used to eat too many sweets, ending so well, brave lad. What a strange fatality that it should fall out so on Good Friday. If it must be so, I am glad that it should have been on Good Friday. It will comfort his father, for, with all his training in such matters, he cannot fail to read the message of hope therein. To us here that is not a hope but a known reality. For those who have not seen as we have seen, it must still be in part a matter of faith. All is well, and his burial on Easter Day is well, also. Come, let us be up and doing. Now I see it plain. I have been waiting for some time, wondering what my duty was. My course of probation finished some short time back, and I have been waiting, waiting. But always my spirit guide has held me back, saying, not yet but now I know. See. See, where he stands. As he spoke the golden spirit of light who was ever with him, but veiled as a rule, from my weak eyes, became manifest. All else faded into insignificance. We seemed almost ourselves to be absorbed into him as he spoke. Take up thy task. Fear not, neither be disheartened. Cease not thy labors till he has climbed hither. Swift to thy labor, and rejoice therein. For this hast thou labored here in preparation. He covered himself as with a mantle of darkness, and the familiar objects once more appeared before our eyes. H.J.L. Come, Jack, we must assume our astral bodies. At least, you must re-enter yours, and I must build up one for myself. As he spoke, a head appeared from under the sofa, a fawn-colored poodle's head, and Molly came out and behaved as if most excited. H.J.L. Bless me, how excited she is. J.W. Molly was rather fond of Rex, and he buried her. H.J.L.R., that will certainly form a connecting link. I wish I knew how she could assume an astral body. I'd take her with me. But perhaps, at first at any rate, it is best to leave her here. The dog seemed very dejected at this, but made no attempt to follow us as we passed out. Once in the country I parted from H.J.L. and returned to my body. There I saw hanging listlessly onto it a double of myself, but thin and vaporous. Next moment it had vanished, and I felt hampered as one does when, after bathing, one begins to clothe one's naked body. Yet my real body lay there still, and as I gazed at it I thought, someday I shall gaze on you thus, and be able to re-enter you no more. Well, said H.J.L. and then you will be quit of a great many worries, temptations, and trials. I looked at H.J.L., who had thus made his presence known to me. His astral seemed almost as if it did not truly fit him. No, it doesn't, he replied, but it's the best I can do. It's not a natural astral form. My old one dissolved ages ago. Let us be going. I know this is not going to be a pleasant business. I've never been on these lower circles of the astral plane before. I know what they are like, though. However, all the better, the more merit, as your Buddhists would say. Now, then. Let us all together. Walls fell away. Darkness enveloped us. A distant rumble grew and grew till it swelled into an awful roar. Lightning flashed around us. That's not thunder and lightning, said H.J.L. It's the echo on this plane of what's going on Earth. J.W. Do you mean the fighting in France? Exactly. You should have guessed if you didn't recognize it at once. W. I half suspected, great clouds of vapor, and black night lit by the constant flashes. Screams of pain and anger, and then vast crowds of spirits. Tens of thousands rushing wildly to and fro. Through these we sped, tossing them aside as a steamer tosses from its prow the waves of an angry sea. Here and there some tried to bar our paths, and others to catch hold of us. But H. J. L., who led the way, hurled them aside. At one spot we passed through a crowd of elementals, hideous and foul, who made a determined rush at me, but I struck angrily at them and several seemed to burst in pieces. For the most part these were bloated things, shapeless abortions, with nightmare faces and long arms, but no distinct bodies. Some, however, were like animals, including fabulous beasts, griffins, and so forth, while others were curious composite creatures, partly animal, partly human. Most were dull gray in color, but a few were angry red or ugly green. We left these behind, and for a moment of time saw a long and desolate country, with broken trees and houses, war entanglements, trenches, and hosts of men who fought desperately, while the guns rolled and flashed. A battle on the astral plane, true to life, so far as we could judge. Soon this was left behind, and at last, among a crowd of wanderers, we found Rex. At once I introduced him to H.J.L., who said, "Do you remember, when you were a naughty boy at Kingston, I threatened to give you in charge of a policeman, and how, after many years, when I asked you if you remembered about it you said, 'Yes. I remember somebody bullied me.'" R.L.W. "Yes, perfectly." H.J.L. "Well, now, you must let me act as the policeman to help and protect you from your enemies here rather than to arrest you. I'm sure everything seems a fearful muddle, and it can help you to get things clear, and ultimately to get to a quieter and more comfortable place. Well, anyway, it is something to meet someone I knew on Earth, and if you'll stay with me a bit it would be awfully decent of you. I'm afraid this isn't much of a place, though. W. We've heard from the adjutant and captain, and they speak very highly, old man, of the way you held on in a tight corner, and of your bravery in general, and of how they could always depend on you. That's jolly decent of them. I just did my best. Yes, it was a tight corner. The worst I was ever in. What happened after I died? Did the last piece fall also? W. We can't be sure, but if it did it was recovered, for they recovered your body and buried it behind the lines 2 days later. Yes, I've some vague recollection of that. Hello. Why are you going? W. My body is calling me back. I leave you with a good friend. Trust him. Goodbye for a while. The ground broke under my feet. I fell, presently I awoke. Chapter 3, A Journey Through the Ages. May 6, 1916. I found H.J.L. and R.L.W. almost on the same spot as that on which I had left them. H.J.L. spoke, "Rex is still in rather a disturbed condition of spirit, and L.M., therefore, going to take him away into the land of utter silence, so that his troubled spirit may recover its equilibrium." J.W. What is this land of utter silence? H.J.L. On the astral plane are to be found all the different stages through which the earth has passed. Thus here one can find the Ice Age, the Carboniferous Age, and so forth. The earliest age of all, the period corresponding geologically with the Archean rocks, is an age practically devoid of all life. Not even mollusks are to be found there, and to this waste, barren land I propose to take your brother. There, away from all sight or sound of the Great War, away from every other astral being, he can rest in absolute silence till at length his condition has become normal. Would you like to accompany us a part of the way? I agreed, and we started off together. For my part one tried to cheer X up, for he seemed rather depressed, and also at times his mind seemed to wander vaguely from one subject to another. After a time we entered a country which seriously resembled Earth at the present day. Here we skirted several cities, but H.J.L. kept to the country roads as far as possible. Some of these cities and towns had evidently come there recently, and Rex declared he recognized several of the smaller ones as towns and villages from northeast France and Flanders. He particularly pointed out Ypres, with its great cathedral and town hall, the roofs standing out above those of the houses which clustered round them. After a time we left this region and came to a tract of country which more nearly resembled England. As we still progressed, I recalled that most of the buildings we saw belonged to the 18th century, and H.J.L. remarked, "Yes, we are back to the time of the Georges. Look at those men over there."